Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Social media, Facebook in particular, is shown to be harmful to a sizable percentage of its users. It's not all doom and gloom, though. And distress hand signals learned on popular TikTok memes may have saved a missing 16-year-old teen. Black Tag aims to be the streaming media platform for black audiences all around the world. Who discusses the importance of this platform and others like it in democratizing content, as well as some of the pitfalls players in this space might face. 23andMe had much more in mind than just allowing customers to research their ancestral roots. The company is using its massive database of the human genome to make better drugs. And we debut our new segment, the Technion Spotlight, where we showcase a black pioneer in the field of technology. We've got all this and more in episode 9 of the Technion. From Columbus, Ohio, I'm your host, Rob Dunwood.
And coming out of Philly, it's your girl, Tech Life Steph.
And out of the suburbs of Atlanta, this is Terrence Gaines, a.k.a. Brother Tech.
You went back to the suburbs of Atlanta?
Well, yeah, because, you know, the Braves, since they wanted to move out to Cobb County, then now I'm going to rep the suburbs of Atlanta since the Braves won. Just for a minute, though, and then I'm going to go back to the Hawks because they had a funny kerfuffle, lack of a better term, about their parade. So they let all the schools out on Friday for the Braves parade. For those who don't know, Atlanta Braves won the World Series, and they just had their parade on this coming Friday. So they let all the people out in preparation for this parade. Well, people were curious as to what they were going to do, whether they were going to have the parade in the city, mm-hmm. where the name of the team is the Atlanta Braves, or were they going to have it out in the county because, you know, the Braves moved their stadium out into the county. So, you know, think of it as a split custody scenario.
parents are fighting. Mom right. and dad are fighting.
Right. So the mediator or the judge, you know, said, all right, I'm gonna start the parade in the city and it's going to carry through the city for a little while. Y'all going to hop on the interstate, go out to the county and then finish the parade in front of the stadium where they play. And then they're going to have some sort of celebration / concert in the actual stadium that they play. Well, the kerfuffle happened and I wasn't there, but I saw some tweets and TikToks of, if you think of a parade, you think, especially a championship parade after a team won a championship, you know, the players are, you know, hanging on top of the bus. They're
right. The ticker tape coming down from the
bus. The parade is going slow. Maybe some of the players get out and they walk in front of the bus. Well, all of that happened on the county side.
Oh.
On the city side, I've seen tweets and I've seen TikToks of the buses and the whole parade going about 20 miles an hour through the city.
So basically, wow. You know, a drive-by.
Basically, they did a drive-by, wave, and then they got out to the county in the suburbs. You take that as you decode. Mm-hmm. And stopped and did the actual parade. So people were up in arms about that. So I just thought that was interesting.
That's janky.
I call myself a sports fan. And I knew that the World Series was going on. I knew who was playing. But I didn't know that it ended yet. So, I just kind of, you know, I'm not a baseball fan at all.
I
like visiting baseball stadiums. Baseball stadiums are always very cool. Like I feel like the vibe is better than like at football stadiums.
Oh yeah.
The food is typically better. Like I do actually like going to baseball games and visiting the stadium.
I love going to baseball games because you don't have to pay intimate attention the whole time. Like you can't go to a basketball game and not pay attention because like the game is moving so fast. Football, I mean, you can kind of stop paying attention to our timeouts and stuff like that. But when it's baseball, I mean, for pretty much you know, for the whole game, you don't have to pay intimate attention because the plays happen so quickly. It's like I want to look at this for 12 seconds, then I want to look away for a minute. Then I want to look at, you know. So I'm with you on that. I love going to the games, but just watching it on TV, I just can't bring myself to do it.
No, not gonna happen.
But y'all,
I watch the World Series, and that's about it.
But before we go much further and even get into the meat of the show, we got to once again thank Professor Tanya M. Evans for showing up. Dr. Professor, because, you know, Terrence, you created a clip of one of the points that she was making. And that thing has thousands of views.
I knew that was a clip as soon as she said it. Right. I made a mental note. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to cut this one up.
And so once again, we are on Patreon. So folks, there is a lot more to that conversation that didn't come out in the general podcast that is for our patrons only. So head over to patreon.com/thetechjohn and you can become a member and get access to those benefits as well. But I just once again say thank you so much. And this is how impressive it was to me. My daddy, he actually called me yesterday and said, son, I listened to your podcast. And I actually listened to the whole thing. It's like, usually I just listen to the first 5 or 6 minutes. You start talking about stuff I don't care about. But
thanks, Dad.
But you know what? I will take the support. where I can get the support. You just like, you know, the fact that he actually is downloading.
5 minutes counts as a listen. I mean, is there a time, you know what I mean, that you got to listen long enough that it counts as a listen? Like, listen.
But no, I told
long
him
enough to count as a listen.
Yeah, I was like, Pops, this one you need to listen to. Not only did he listened, played it back a couple. Oh, that was a good point. Let me go back and get this. And he said, you know, listening to people talk about money is not generally something that I do because in his mind, no one can count his money better than he can count it himself. So that's just how he rolls. But he's like, no, this was really interesting in the way she broke down what Bitcoin actually is and how it works. Made him go out because he has a Cash App account and he put a little money and bought him some Bitcoin. So it worked. We got at least one. So
To juxtapose that with my father, because I had that same conversation, I had to force my family to get into a chat group. So my whole point with getting him in the chat group is to share information like this. So when we had the conversation, I cut the clip. I actually sent that clip to my family, you know, and it started the conversation. But then it got to the point to where investment part, well, can't you just do it for me? I'm like, that defeats the purpose of you managing your wealth if I'm doing it for you. I gave you the link. I'm sending some other links, you know, like real basic. What is Bitcoin? You know, real, real basic. He's like, oh, well, can't you just do it for me? I'm like, oh.
No, I can't.
But no, and I don't know, maybe we will.
But that's what's up. I mean, I think that's, you know, was the whole point of this podcast is just to get the information to our
people exposed,
right? You know, that they need to stay up on what's happening in this tech economy and in this innovation economy. So it just confirms why this content is so relevant and necessary for our community and, you know, really just, you know, gives, I think, all of us the motivation to keep going.
Absolutely. And we will undoubtedly talk about crypto and Bitcoin and Ethereum and all that kind of stuff again in future episodes. We probably will talk about it multiple times because it is a thing. So much a thing that the mayor-elect of New York, this bro is going to actually get his first, I think, 3 paychecks in Bitcoin.
Well, now I need to put a caveat in there. He has asked for his first 3 paychecks in Bitcoin. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And honestly, you know, I ain't going to run too hard with the story. I'll let y'all handle that. But it seems like a ginormous publicity stunt. Mm-hmm. at least 50% of it anyway, you know, because the mayor of Miami and there's a whole thing with that. But I'll let you get into that. I have some thoughts.
I wasn't even taking that deep. I was just saying that he's doing it. It is a thing. This stuff is not going away. That was the bigger point that I'm making, because A.A. Rod Rogers, who we don't really want to talk about him right now, but we'll talk about this. I think he's even getting some of his contract in like Bitcoin. And then
was it what's his name? Beast Mode. What's his real name?
Marshawn
Didn't he get some of his money in Bitcoin too?
Marshawn Lynch.
Yeah, didn't he get some of his money in Bitcoin too?
I don't know if it was him. One of them NFL players did, and they made a killing off of it. I can't think of it.
And I know, like, I feel like Russell, what's Sierra's husband's name? Russell Wilson?
Russell Wilson.
Or somebody gave his teammates some Bitcoin. Like as because I think quarterbacks they be gifting their D line, their O line, like
crazy.
Yeah. And I think he gave his O line like some Bitcoin or something too.
So it's out there. Like I said, we will definitely have more conversations about it. That, you know, that conversation we had last week was so well received. We are to this day still getting, you know, tweets, and people are looking at the clips that we put out there of it. And it's something that, you know, as Professor Evan said, it's something that we simply need to be in. We do not want to let this one pass us by. So with that, let's go ahead and get into the meat of the show. And I know we talk about social media a lot because there's a lot going on in social media. And it's, you know, particularly it's something that we need to pay attention to. But, you know, there's a story out with Facebook was harmful for 360 million users. So what is that, about 10% of users are suffering ill effects from the use of Facebook?
Well, it's funny because I kind of likened it to like the population of this country. You know, just imagine if everybody in this country was like, Facebook is killing me, you know, or it's killing my mental health, or it's kill, you know, it just it I think it really that number, that 350 million number, just kind of really put it in perspective for me, because that could literally be everybody in this country, you know, if you look at, you know, population, where obviously it's global, but that's a lot of people. That's a lot of people who are just being, you know, negatively affected by social media.
And we're so, you know, American egocentric that we always think that everything affects us most. But where this is worst is actually in India and in the Philippines, where that's Facebook's biggest market, because you're talking about, you know, with India, you know, over, you know, their population is over, what is it, 1.1 billion or something like that. I mean, they're right up there. So they have just an enormous amount of folks, you know, on Facebook. It is the internet for them. We talked about that a few shows back, how Facebook can almost be your on-ramp to the internet. And I believe it was like 1 in 4 are feeling these effects. So it's a, yeah, people need to, you know, I always heard people say, yeah, I want to take that digital detox. I want to get off of social for a while. And I never really, why? It's like, it's fun to be on there. But, you know, for me, I was just never on it like that. But I think now as I start to get into it more, and I'm just like in this group and that group, sometimes you just need to, I'll see y'all in a month. I'll go chill. We'll chill and recharge a little bit.
Well, you know, it of course, like you mentioned, it depends on why you're on the social media. You know, there are a lot of people who can legitimately say, or from their perspective, say, I mean, just get off of Facebook. Why are you attached to it like that? You know, it's just supposed to be for fun. You know, it's supposed to be social, you know, but it is changed to where a lot of people make, if not all of their money, most of their money, marketing, engagement, you know, everything relies around social media, to where, you know, nowadays, if your business doesn't have a Facebook page, you know, you're missing out, or you get the impression that you're missing out on a lot of opportunity. So, you know, for those who say, oh, you know, social media is supposed to be for fun, you know, just cut it off. There are some people who, like, if they did not include social media in their marketing advertising campaign, one, they would not reach all the people that they normally do. And two, it may be crazy expensive to do traditional marketing when the allure to social media is it's free. And I mean, in most cases now, of course, you got to pay for Facebook ads and marketing, things of that nature. But that evergreen, viral marketing, that's free. And I think that is how a lot of people get negatively impacted, in my opinion, to tie it all back to the story, is that if I just get this one viral post or comment or video or whatever the case may be, I can use that to launch all these other things that I want to do, or just get out of this rut or whatever the case may be, you know. So it's almost like the lottery. I just get that one hit and then I'm on.
That's,
you know, so they're digging, they're searching, they're maybe even, you know, distancing from who they really are just to get on. And then once they get on, then again, that takes them wherever. But we don't see all the people who didn't get on. We always hear about that one viral sensation. We don't hear about the 99% of the people, you know, out there negatively impacted because they're searching for something that they're not getting from social media.
Well, and I think this is just a reflection of where we are as a society. When you have people that are disconnected, so disconnected in real life from friends and family and just interaction with actual human beings, that you now get to a point where you're relying on these platforms as, you know, not only just entertainment, but communication, connection, you know, everything with the outside world, you know, lives on these platforms. So, you know, we really do have to kind of get back to basics in some sense in how we interact and relate to each other, because social media is not real. Just FYI for whoever's listening, It's just not real, and we really need to get back to real interactions, real human interactions. You know, the metaverse ain't gonna cut it for us psychologically and mentally and emotionally, and it seems like it's only getting worse.
So we can't just leave that on a down note. There are some positive benefits of social media. And the fact that we're doing this show is a benefit of what social media can do. I mean, that's how people learn about our show. But Stephanie, you have put a story in here about a little girl who, you know, I mean, she had been kidnapped. She was missing. And based on some things she learned off of social media, was able to help some people, let people know that she was in trouble. So why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah, there was a 16-year-old girl who had been missing for several days. She was rescued this past Thursday when she caught the attention of a driver by using hand gestures to signal that she was in distress. Now, this was in Kentucky, in Laurel County, Kentucky. Said, you know, they arrested a guy after he was pulled over. He had, you know, child porn on his phone and all this other stuff. But basically, there is a hand signal that domestic violence survivors can use to let people know that they are in distress, that this young girl learned on TikTok that she used, and someone saw her and called 911. So, I mean, I'm, you know, for everybody who is watching the stream or will watch this replay, I'm going to do the hand signal just so you know. It's, you know, if you hold up your hand, if you hold up your hand palm up and put your thumb over the palm of your hand, so like you were making the number four, but keep your fingers together, and then so you do that first and then you close your fingers over your thumb. So it's a two-step motion. You hold up your hand so that your palm is facing outward. You put your thumb over your palm, and then you close your fingers over your thumb. And that will alert people that you may be in some sort of distress. There was the Canadian Women's Foundation. This is actually an international universal signal for help in cases of domestic violence. So women around the world, you know that this is something that people can see and know that you're, you know, in distress. And like I said, just I wanted to put these two stories together just to show, you know, as much as we, you know, get on social media for you know, making 350 million people feel distressed, it is also teaching us a lot of things and potentially saving lives. So it's that tool that can be used for good and bad, but you got to have that balance.
Right. And tool is the important part, because a lot of people don't see social media as a tool. They see it as their lives. And same thing with anything, politics, religion, whatever the case may be, it should be a tool. It should be the one and only thing. And I may be stepping into some deep waters on that, but I take. So
our next story in the lineup, and this is one I really wanted to dig in. I have a lot of thoughts and opinions on this, but it is, what is Black Tag? Black Tag is, a new company that's doing some really, really cool things with video. Essentially, you can think of it almost as a Netflix or a Hulu type service. But this is being run by Black creators. And, the goal of this is to put Black creators on. So I wanted to get both of your opinions. I think you both had the opportunity to take a look at the story. But, what are your thoughts about this Black Tag that is specifically a, and I already know what you guys think, but I just want you to say it. what are your thoughts on a platform that is, that is basically, FUBU's for us, by us, to put, mm-hmm. Folks who are doing the kind of stuff that we're doing on in front of our audiences, and bypassing all of those gatekeepers that we had to go through for just forever.
You want to go first?
Well, I'm scared to go first because I may surprise you.
Go ahead, man. What you got?
So, too many cooks in the kitchen is not the phrase that I want to apply to this. Mm-hmm. But what I do want to say is we as Black folks looking to find our own places to where we can share and not feel threatened and also get the shine that we deserve. I'm concerned that we may
dilute.
Yes, that's the exact word I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. Dilute our power, our potential, if a bunch of these type services pop up out of the blue for a very good reason. We need these type of services. We need to show people that we don't have to be on Facebook. We don't have to only be on Facebook. We don't have to only be on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, YouTube. We can also be on another service that caters to us specifically and make sure our needs are met. The problem is we may run into an issue. We have to be careful to where we're not diluting into where there is a Black Tag. And then there's also a fan base.
Right.
And there's a, same thing with the Black business directories. I saw that.
Oh my God. Too. There's like 1,000 of those. Yeah.
And it's like, yeah. There's something to be said about not having a one or a one method, if not one way, or not one service, one method of figuring out how we can do this versus everybody, we all taking our little bit and then splitting out, right? That mm-hmm. dilutes. And, I want to be careful about that. But outside of that, I do think we do need to explore and we need to experiment and we do need to find what other additional options that we have to us besides being solely beholding to the big dogs, for lack of a better term.
Right. And honestly, I agree wholeheartedly. You didn't surprise me at all. Okay. I think we really need to do, what is collective work and responsibility? Ain't that one of the principles of Kwanzaa? Mm-hmm. We really need to start figuring out how to really implement that in practice for real, because I feel like what is happening when you do have all these disparate platforms all over the place, quality suffers big time. You know what I mean? I'm looking at this from a straight tech perspective, and I downloaded Black Tag about a week ago, and I ain't hating. I really ain't. We definitely need, our own outlets, and we need to maintain ownership of our content and all the rest of that. This particular platform reminds me very much of a Quibi style platform. I don't know if you guys remember Quibi. Mm-hmm. It kind of came and went
grand opening, quick. Grand closing.
Yeah, yeah. But it was a really well done platform. I will say that the content was amazing. I had my trial. I don't think I might have paid $7.99 for like a month, but it's just too much. When you start talking about adding all these different streaming platforms to your bill. But while I was watching it, the content was very well produced. It was optimized for vertical video, which was the whole sort of, you know, little kicker behind Quibi. It was just really, really well done. That's mm-hmm. what I will say about it. And this one is not that. As much as it is trying to be, at a minimum, it's not optimized for vertical video. That was the first thing that I noticed about the content on the platform. And then, so when you take all of these disparate platforms that are all just okay, mm-hmm. but yet you want us to pay for them, mm-hmm. that's what it becomes a problem. I mean, when you look at fan base, it's like, I have fan base on my phone too. I got all of these on my phone. However, you know, how much am I really engaging with them? How much am I really, you know, contributing any sort of content to them? Would I be willing to pay for any of it? And honestly, the answer is just no right now, because they're not there yet. And right. and I think that's the you know,
chicken or the egg.
Your point. Yes, your point right. is part of the problem. It's like, there's too many. And I think we need to really, you know, figure out how to pool our resources, you know, because the Valley ain't going to give us no money, you know, then we need to figure out how to really pool our resources to create one or two that are high quality, that will allow us to get paid and showcase our talent in the best light and do all those wonderful, beautiful things that we keep saying we want. But the quality has to be there. And right now, honestly, you know, no hate, no shade. It just ain't there yet. It just ain't there yet.
I hear what both of you are saying, and I actually kind of agree with that, you know, that standpoint as well. But just to put this out here, you know, here's another thought that I also hold, if I can talk out of both sides of my mouth. These platforms are going to go through the same trials and tribulations that all platforms go through. You can mm-hmm. say the exact same thing about the, you know, the majority of the things that are like this out there. And eventually the cream kind of rises to the top. You know, if the content on this, like if you really like the content on Funny or Die, that's where you'll go. If you really like the content on Black Tag, that's where you'll go. If you really like the content on, and I threw this in the notes, on Kev on Stage Studios, because that's actually something that I actually subscribe to, because I really like that comedian. You know, I've seen him, you know, a couple of times. I like the type of relatively clean comedy that they do. And, you know, that mm-hmm. vibes with me. So I was a fan of just watching, you know, Kev on Stage all over social media, on Facebook, on Instagram. He's pretty much everywhere. It's like, oh, you have your own streaming service. Oh, let's go check this out. So mm-hmm. I think that, you know, even though there may be a lot of these things that are coming up, the ones that are good are going to ultimately kind of rise to the top, and you'll probably start to see some consolidation. Mm-hmm. The other side of this, though, or not even the other side, just a different take on this. I think that these things are super important, because, you know, a conversation that I have with I don't want to say a lot, but with, you know, some of my, you know, and these are true, honest friends, people that I care for, who care for me. You know, who have a little bit less melanin in their tones. I've actually had them. It's like, so I want to ask, I want to understand.
You mean like white folks?
Yes. I mean like white
folks. Okay. Do you want to be clear?
Why do you feel like you need to create your own platform? You know, couldn't mm-hmm. you just create a platform and not talk about it being, you know, this or that? And, mm-hmm. You know, I don't immediately hit them with the white privilege, you know, hammer, because that can often shut down conversation. But I try to explain is that, you know, when you say that, you're probably thinking of the thing that you don't have to think, well, this is a white thing. It is just a thing for you. But when it is just a thing for you, sometimes my perspective, my point of view, my culture isn't expressed on that. So in order for me to actually be able to see that, in order for me to be able to listen to that, in order for me to be able to, you know, partake in that culture that I might be looking for, I can't always go to the mainstream thing, because my culture isn't in this country, you know, for the last 400 and some odd years, it has not been mainstream. We're trying to get it there, but it just isn't. So I think these platforms are super important, because one of the things that the internet has done, it is it is, I don't want to say it's rendered, you know, the big media houses insignificant. It absolutely hasn't done that. You know,
right.
But it's changed. It's democratized the
exactly. process to some extent. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So when I look at, like I said, you know, something that I subscribe to, you know, Kevin on Stage Studios, when I look at that, it's like, you know, what he's doing, he couldn't have done that 10 years ago. At the level and with the speed. I mean, this thing popped up during the pandemic. I mean, it was pretty quick, fast, and in a hurry that he got this thing up and going. I look at things like, you know, like Roland Martin's network. Now, his is a little different. It's not an actual, you know, program that you download. He is, you know, curating content from Black creators all over and just saying, here's the stuff that, you know, I think that, you know, you might like, you might want to listen to.
He has his own show on there as well.
Right. His own show with the Black Star Network.
He does a daily show. I have that app on my phone too. Mm-hmm. He does a daily show. His wife does, some prayer, something. And there's other content on there. Like right now, I think you can go on there and watch, Colin Powell's funeral, actually right. in its entirety. Mm-hmm. So it's more of a news-based platform. I think that probably is the difference. Don't get me wrong. Let me go on record. If I sounded like I was hating and was never going to support these platforms, that is not the case. I think they are all necessary. I definitely, like I said, I have them all on my phone, but would I pay for, you know, once we start talking coins, like I don't have unlimited disposable income. So, you know, if I'm deciding between watching The Harder They Fall and paying for my Netflix subscription and this, the choice might be fairly easy. And I understand that that's a whole, it's not even an apples to apples comparison for real. But I think if we got together, I think for my earlier rant is that if we got together and didn't try to create so many little networks and really worked on creating one or two that did have that production value, and the technical infrastructure and backbone underneath all of that to make it work seamlessly and things like that, I think we could really create something amazing if we could get that to happen.
That could compete to
that
to
could compete with. Absolutely. That could compete be the Black Netflix.
So you really have to scratch your head and be like, yo, I may have to switch over on this, right. And then, you know, everything else right. comes to play. So yeah, I get it as well. But the benefit, like to co-sign Rob's point, the benefit that a lot of these Black platforms, you know, they get the direct support from the customers mm-hmm. that they're looking to cater to, where else a lot of these big time companies get money all over the place. They may get it from ad dollars. They may get it from companies. They may get it from whatever, to where they are split on the type of content they want to provide. They feel like they need to provide content for everybody versus some of these streaming platforms we're talking about. One goal, you know, mm-hmm. and they get their money directly from their consumers. So it's right. like, all right, we need to make sure that this is the content they want to see, or we ain't gonna get no checks next week.
That's
so
right.
It's a good problem to have, right? That may put them, you know, like Rob said, you know, after a while, the cream will rise to the top, because the best platform that did exactly what they set out to do and did it well, you know, they'll get their shine, and then people will start to come on. So it's like, it goes, in my opinion, to the chicken or egg thing. You know, do the people come and the content gets better, or does the content get better and the people come?
True. If you build it, they will come. I'm putting this out there right now. I feel like AfroTech is a pretty big, well-known conference for Black folks in technology. Mm-hmm. I think they have the clout to mm-hmm. bring together the players that could make this happen mm-hmm. The way it needs to. They could get a Tyler Perry on board. They could probably, you know, get the Black Tag folks, and they could definitely get a Roland Martin, and they, you know what I mean, we can bring these people together to really get in a room together, strategize how we make this happen for real, how we get the money for real, you know, get all of those Black investors, you know, the rappers
get
that
all
are now
the creators
in tech,
to come off,
you know, get all the mm-hmm. creators, you know, that are popping on TikTok right now. Like, I think you know, there needs to be somebody who has that type of influence that, you know, could get, and maybe, you know, the Tech John could do, I don't know.
We'll be there.
We can moderate that panel, you know what I'm saying? But somebody needs to do that and get these people in a room and talk about what it would really take to make this happen.
Yep. Right. And as I said, and you know, what I like about this story so much is the fact that it's just possible. Because this wasn't absolutely something that was possible. You know, I threw in here right at the, you know, right before we went live about Greenwood District Studio. This is a story. It literally just came out in the news today. And this is a actual movie studio that a comedian has, you know, got backing and funding to put together up in Michigan. It's going to be a black owned movie studio where they are going to create, you know, FUBU style content. You know, like I said, I don't want to compare it to what Tyler Perry has done with his stuff yet, because that dude's a billionaire. You know, they clearly aren't there yet. But it's just the opportunity is like, hey, we have people who want to see a certain type of comedy. We have people who want to see a certain type of story. We're not seeing that out in the market, and they're willing to put their dollars in front of it. Let's go build a movie studio. And I'm just glad that I'm seeing so many folks doing this. Another one, you know, Country Wayne. I don't know if you guys have ever seen any of his comedy. But this dude is...
His YouTubes are hilarious.
They are hilarious. Country Wayne.
Yeah,
he's one of social media stars that, you know, pretty much made a name for themselves solely on social media, to where so much so to where it would be hard to pull him into something network because he's making a killing on social media, right, and YouTube.
If the platform was there, because I bet Country Wayne ain't turning down a Netflix deal, a three picture Netflix.
I'm saying you gotta
make the platform attractive enough that it adds value to what you're doing on your own. You know what I mean?
Right.
And that's the key. I think the quality of the platform is going to be the make or break, you know, because we don't, you know, as black folks, we don't give folks a second chance. If the thing ain't right, oh man, I went there and they made me wait 30 minutes. I ain't never going back there again. You know what I mean? You're not going to give a whole lot of time, you know,
so to work
the kinks out, unfortunately, you know, for better or for worse. You're not going to get a whole lot of chances to especially technical kinks. Like if your site, if your app is crashing and the website don't work and buffering and all that other stuff, like we need all of those pieces to come together in a very significant way, along with the content.
And it can be done.
It can be done.
We shouldn't have all these different, it shouldn't have to be the only way that these things cream, you know, these platforms rise to the top. They got to struggle and they got to scratch and they got to scrape.
Right.
You know,
we don't need to struggle.
Right. There should be a way to where we could get together and be like, all right, here, you know, and then, you know, support you and let you grow, you know, and it would just be nice to be able to do that, you know.
Right. Agreed.
So this was an awesome story. I knew we were going to have a good conversation with it.
Tech John's invite, Afrotech. I'm just saying. I'm shooting my shot right now because we need to make this happen. And there's no reason it can't, you know. Especially with all the investors now, we got Snoop and Carmelo and Hammer and all these people putting all this money into these startups. It's like, put it into a content startup for black folks. Come on.
Absolutely.
I got five on it.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So, Tech Life, Steph, you had Terrence and I read this. It was a really,
Really, really good article. But you hit us up or text me. Oh, it must be important because she texted us.
Well,
this
it's
story.
Funny because I had saved a few different articles from, I used Apple News Plus, and I had saved a few different articles, and the one about the TikTok and this, and I couldn't remember this one, and I thought I saved it. I didn't have it in my saved. I had opened it in my browser and then lost that window. I don't know, but I forgot about this story. And this was really the main one I wanted to include for this week. So when I went back and found it again, I was like, oh snap, I did want to talk about, like, we definitely got to talk about this one. So I'm happy that we were able to get it in the show.
We got it in the show. And I read the entire article. Mm-hmm. It was 9 times longer than I thought it was going to be, but it was good. So this is your article. This is your story. I'm going to let you go ahead and tell folks what it is we're talking about.
So we are talking about the idea that 23andMe is now evolving from just a DNA testing company, an ancestry sort of health judging you, do you have the breast cancer gene or whatever, to actually making drugs based on the data, on the genetic data they've collected from their 11 million users. That was always their goal. At the beginning of the article, it talks about how when 23andMe went public earlier this year, one of the first investors gave Ann Wojcicki, I hope I'm pronouncing her name correctly, the one sheet pitch that she gave them in the beginning about how she saw this company going over time. And she's basically held true to that this whole time, is basically get the kits going, make them popular, and then get the data. You know, first comes the money, then comes the cash, then comes the, you know, whatever. And this was always a part of their plan, was to grab that data and then be able to leverage that data to create almost custom solutions based on various genetic typing, and illness. So it all sounds good because it usually always does sound good at the beginning, but there are so many different red flags to this story to me that I feel like we had to be aware of what was happening. Cause you know, I think Black folks use those sort of ancestry kits as much as anybody else. And this just reeks of Henrietta Lacks at scale. And if anybody doesn't know who Henrietta Lacks was, she was a Black woman, you know, back in the day. I don't know the actual year that everything kind of went down, but she got cancer and they used some of her cells. And they are still using some of her cells like decades later, because she had this kind of these cells that continued to replicate on their own for a long period of time, which was unheard of. That's why they called the story about her is called the immortal life of Henrietta Lacks, because her cells are still actually alive, and they've made millions and millions of dollars off of the cancer treatments that they've been able to develop based on her cells. And her family has sued, and I think they might have finally got some money behind it. But Oprah made a movie about this woman's life and the whole thing. I got the book around here somewhere. But this just reeks of that at scale. You know, I understand that everybody that used one of these kits checked the box to say, yes, you can use my data however you want. But I don't think anybody really read that and knew exactly what that meant for real. And you know, that's just one, you know, of the issues I have with this whole thing.
So the thing with this where I see potential issues is that this is, you know, 23andMe is not a insurance company. It is not a hospital. They're not a medical services provider. Therefore, they don't fall under HIPAA laws. You know, what is it? Healthcare Insurance Portability Act or Portability and Accountability Act or something like that. But they don't fall under these laws, which basically makes it virtually impossible for these organizations, hospitals, insurance companies, medical providers, to share your information with anyone. you know, in some cases, even when you give them the ability to, you say, yes, I don't mind you sharing it. They still have some, you know, some rules that, well, even though you said yes, we need to really make sure that you meant yes. Whereas with this is a privately owned company. If you say, yep, you can do whatever you want to do with my, my genome that you've now mapped,
right.
You know, kind of, you know, you have to understand what that means. And I get it. I have an aunt who is really, really, really into like genealogy and all that kind of stuff. And I think that, it wasn't, 23andMe. I think she might've been, with ancestry.com or something like that, you know, back in the day before. It's like, I don't know if that's where you want to be, you know, when you start to look at, you know, who that, you know, company is owned by. But she's really into this and, you know, trying to figure out, oh, you know, this is, you know, where we stem from in this part of, you know, Western Africa, you know, all that kind of really good stuff. But they have your genome. The reason this company exists is because, you know, a few years back, you know, we finally mapped the human genome. And there's so many things that come from that. But you are, you know, spitting in a cup and sending it to this company, and they now have you. They have, you know, everything there is about you, your DNA. And I think for, you know, where 23andMe is looking to go, to where they want to actually start making drugs and using the information, you know, that they've collected on their millions of customers who have paid good money to have their genome mapped. You know, they want to make drugs. So everything sounds really, really good. You know, I believe that the CEO was saying, she's even said, you know, we wouldn't do that kind of thing. I've never done that kind of thing.
That's
it's like, you maybe you wouldn't, but this company is probably going to outlast you.
That's what they always say.
And at some point, you know, I think, you know, for this to take off, you know, people are going to have to understand what it means when you have said, yeah, you can do with this, you can share this data with whom you want to share it with. You know, even though this is not a medical institution, I'm wondering if we're going to see some laws come into place to where they start getting treated almost like a, you know, almost like a medical facility where maybe a HIPAA type of law, you know, protects the consumers that are giving their genome. You know, there's so many other things that I can think that could go wrong, particularly for folks that look like us. But just across the board, regardless of what your you know, what color you are, what culture you come from, you may not want to just have it out there for companies to trade and to innovate on and to use you as, you know, their model for creating
guinea pig,
you know,
as their guinea pig.
Exactly.
Literally.
So it's the, and I'm pretty sure I'm making light of this, you know, comparison, but it's this, to me, it's like the same thing with Facebook and Apple. Facebook was taking all this data, you know, and we thought they were just going to use it to better, give me a better news feed.
Improve your services and experience on the platform.
Right. So everybody says, yeah, sure, they're going to do something to make my experience on Facebook cooler, right? You know, and then fast forward, they're doing all this other stuff, you know, selling your data, whatever the case may be. So then Apple comes along and says, hey, what we're going to do for our customers is give users the option on whether or not Facebook can track you and take all your things. And surprisingly, but not really surprisingly, most people said, yeah, I don't want them to do that. Mm-hmm. So I take that same argument and put it towards this particular show, company, you know, 23andMe and their plan. If 23andMe came out the gate and said, yo, we're going to take your data, we'll help you find out, you know, your ancestry or wherever you come from. But what we're also going to do is we're probably going to either one, sell your data to pharmaceutical companies and who knows what they're going to do. And two, we may even turn into a pharmaceutical company. And then once we come through this crazy breakthrough or whatever, charge you access to do whatever. Is that cool?
Right.
Most people would probably say it. No.
You know what I mean?
So it's almost like, yeah, sure. It sounds great or it sounds altruistic that 23andMe wants to has these grandiose plans of cancer research, you know, all these other diseases that plague us now that we feel, you know, with the right money, with the right brains, with the right whatever drugs, whatever the case may be, we can eradicate a lot of these things, dementia, Alzheimer's, cancer, all these things that plague us, right? But the reason why you presented the you presented this case and then turn around and use it for something other than what we got the impression that you were going to use it for. And it took folks, it's like people don't like to be taken advantage of. And this, you could use this 23andMe thing and say, I felt like they played me. And nobody likes to get played, regardless of the reason.
Everybody was going to want their cut. That was the other thing. I'm like, if you using my DNA to create, and you just made, oh, I'm gonna need a percentage of that, you know. And they knew that that would happen, and they knew those floodgates would open, and everybody and their mama would be like, "I need you. You owe me $5." So it's disingenuous to say. And she actually said, and I wrote it down. Where is it? Oh, she wanted to. She said, "Can we be the first drug development group that is loved by people?" Because typically, you know, pharmaceutical companies are just like, you know,
bad taste in your mouth,
the awful giants that charge a bunch of money for stuff. And, you know, she has this sort of, you know, utopian idea of what this company can be, but it's just not realistic. It just doesn't fit into a capitalist society narrative at all. You know, images of Martin Shkreli come to mind when I think about this as well. He was the guy that took the price of an AIDS drug from $13 to $750 because he could. And and you know, I just don't see how the average consumer wins from this. You know, I mean, you know, there might be the one person that who has this rare disease that they're able to fast track a treatment for because of this data that gets cured. But, you know, by and large, I just don't see how the consumer is going to come out on top in all of this.
So I just wanted to be clear and say, so, you know, what 23andMe has actually done, what they're doing. Mm-hmm. What they're telling you sounds on the up and up. And there's some pieces of this that absolutely make sense. They have, I believe, 6 million customers. They have a lot of DNA.
They have 11 they have a million. Lot. They have 11 million 11 customers. Million. And their data set is based off of 8.8 million customers that opted in and said, yes, you can use my data. So they have data points from 8.8 million people
now. So they have enormous amounts of data. And if you use that data, you can come up with some ingenious drugs. You know, there's no question about that. So all the stuff that they're telling you, they can do these things very effectively, very cost effectively, because they have your genome. That part, there's no dispute in that. There are a lot of goods, you know, a lot of good can come out of this. But what we're talking about is that
there's our capitalism society is set up.
This is a company. This is a company who, you know, their bottom line is, can we be more profitable than we were yesterday? That, you know, can we turn this dollar today into $2 tomorrow? That is what ultimately drives them. So I'm just saying, for me personally, and I think you guys would probably agree on this, it's like, There needs to be, you know, some rules that are going, you know, a lot of people who are really, really smart need to think about this and come up with, we need to put some rules, some procedures in place that are going to protect people about things they weren't thinking of when they said, oh yeah, you can use my data to find out what part of Europe I'm from or what part of, you know, Asia I have, ancestors from. You know, I think that's where, you know, this is, I don't want to say going off the rails, but this is where there's a potential for it too. So I just wanted to, you know, put that clear. There is a lot of good that can come from what they're trying to do. We just want to make sure that we're protected as they're actually doing it. Because although she has said, you know, we want to be loved, you know, we've never done that. I wouldn't do that. People. You know what? Right. You wouldn't do that, but I don't trust your board. You know, maybe I trust you, but I don't trust your board.
And you know what the old saying goes, the road to hell is paved with good intentions.
That's right. That's absolutely right. And it's funny because there have been reports, and I don't know if these have been substantiated, but when Ancestry.com first came out, that they were actually selling data to insurance companies, to healthcare insurance companies, and those companies were then making determinations about who could get covered or not based on that data. One of these companies was doing that. So there's no real anything keeping 23andMe from doing that as well. Also, in the article, it talked about the idea that, you know, based on those 8.8 million people's data, they could create, you know, cures or treatments for various specific conditions and then sell them back to the people that they know have the condition that they got the data from in the first place. You know, so what kind of monopoly are you creating in that instance when, you know, you're the only company that makes a drug that this person that you know has this, you know, it just something ain't sitting right. There's something in the milk ain't clean with that. And then you can charge whatever you want. Again, so now we go back to the price gouging. That's a possibility as well. So there's you know, like you said, there's a lot of pros and benefits and the idea that we could get to cures and treatments faster and more efficiently, but this just reeks. This just right. Reeks to me. This just absolutely reeks, the whole thing.
And like I said, I you know,
sorry,
I
mean, not sorry.
This is just, you know, my opinion. I don't necessarily want to see this shut down. I just want safeguards put in place that can protect me from the thing that I'm not even thinking about.
We see how well that's going with social media in our federal government.
Right. And they're trying to sidestep the same roadblocks, red tape, political stuff, for lack of a better term, that holds this type of stuff up. But on the flip side, it protects companies from, you know, falling to where now, again, there's a data leak or whatever the case may be, you know, all these other things. So it's almost like, you know, especially when it comes to stuff as important as our health and our DNA, there should be, you know, guards and safety and things in place. So, and then let me just take this time to shout out my homegirl, Gina Page. She is the co-founder of African Ancestry. And one of their models is, because they juxtapose themselves against, like you mentioned, Stephanie, at just regular ancestry that may or may not have been caught up in, whether they're selling your data to insurance companies and then they use that to figure out your insurance costs or whatever. African Ancestry, you know, they really said, okay, we definitely are not like these folks, because the only thing we're going to use your data for, and we're not going to sell your data, is to use it to trace your roots, which is what a lot of Black folks specifically use these services for, primarily is to trace their roots. You know, so just to put that in a construct is, you know, that's what a lot of people use these things for. And then the fact that these companies are now saying, okay, we're going to try this and we're going to try that, that's not what the people signed up for, even though they did check that box.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I'm sure we'll be talking about this again, because they're about to get a whole another big infusion of cash. They've already, they just went public. They already had a relationship or a collaboration agreement with Glaxo to do some other stuff. Now they're actually doing their own. So this is, you know, this genie is out of the bottle at this point, and it'll just remain to be seen. Because it's going to take some government intervention to get some stuff set up so that, you know, people aren't being taken advantage of and this data is not being used in nefarious ways. But we'll see. We're going to keep our eyes on it.
This is definitely.
In the meantime, I ain't going to be spitting in no cups. That's all I'm
saying. This is definitely a story that we want to keep an eye on just to see how this goes. But that being said, we are, we got a little bit of a format change that we're making to the show. Normally, this is where we would go into, our patrons, our new patrons. We're still going to do that. But we've got a little new spotlight called the Tech John Spotlight that we're going to do in the show. So, Stephanie, I'm going to let you take it away.
All righty. So this, again, we just want to highlight people of color in tech, either past or present, doing big things or doing historic things or doing anything, just so we can get the same kind of shine that everybody else gets and that we certainly deserve. So this week we are talking about Gerald Jerry Lawson. Gerald Jerry Lawson was a gaming pioneer who in 1976 led a team of engineers that developed and released the first removable video game cartridges. Lawson built the Fairchild Channel F console, whose technology was later adopted by gaming brands like Atari and Nintendo. The Channel F console included the gaming world's first digital at-home joystick and the first ever pause button, in addition to the removable cartridges. After leaving Fairchild, Lawson went on to found VideoSoft in 1980, which made gaming software for the Atari 2600 and was believed to be the earliest Black-owned game development company. Born and raised raised in Queens, Lawson never graduated from college, but has an award in his name through the IDGA Foundation, an endowment in his name at USC, sponsored by Microsoft and video game company Take-Two Interactive, and was inducted into the World Video Game Hall of Fame. So salute to Gerald Jerry Lawson. I don't know if he was the one that suggested you blow on the cartridges to make them work better, but he was the one responsible for the cartridges that we used in our games back in the day and today. So
now, I don't know about you, Stephanie, but Terrence and I are both, I think we both would consider ourselves gamers. And
I play games. I ain't no gamer.
Okay, I'm
not like I used to be. But when I was in college, I used to carry a joystick with me in my backpack because you never knew where a game of Tecmo Bowl was gonna break out. Whose dorm room you was in? So that's how I was, and it's kind of, you know, I don't play clearly as much as I used to, but I could just say this dude is probably in the years of enjoyment, when you think about just the number of hours that I've played video games from the time I was, you know, 6, 7, 8 years old until I'm almost 50 now. So yeah, this was a good, you know, a good spotlight to kick it off. And I think we're going to do this every week, right?
We're going to try.
Try to do this every week.
And if anybody has somebody that they want to see spotlighted, definitely, you know, hit us up on socials at the Tech John all around the web. And we would love to, you know, shout them out.
You know what? For folks who are still listening, I meant to mention this at the beginning of the show, so I'll make sure I do it at the beginning of next show. But we're on Discord. So if you want to hit us up, that is the way to do it. I was talking to Terrence the other day. I was like, hey, I just turned Discord on. There's like 30-some-odd people who instantaneously started talking. I was not expecting that it was going to be that quick. But yeah, we are on Discord. So if you want to hit us up on our Discord, patrons. And speaking of patrons, we have every week, we are blessed to say that every week since we have started our Patreon account, that we have had multiple people sign up and who are supporting us and helping us hold the show down financially. And we have more this week. So as we always do at the end of our show, I want to read these names off. So this week we have Tanya E., Angelique A., Rich Wright, Charles W. Baisden, and Yvette Corley. These are our new patrons.
People are personal friends of mine, so thank you. I love y'all.
I know some of them names as well. So, I am just, you know, we're so honored that you would actually, financially help support our new podcast. I mean, this is just episode 9. We've only been doing this for, you know, not 3 months yet. So it's always nice to see that we have folks who are saying, you know, I like the show so much, I'm going to actually help them do what they do.
Like you said, cream rises to the top. When you put good stuff out there, folks will support.
So why don't you guys tell folks how they can reach out and get to you?
All right. Well, you can find me everywhere on the socials at Brother Tech, BROTHATECH.
And I am all around the web at Tech Life Steph, and you can check out my website at tilldeathdotweet.com.
And I am at all things Rob Dunwood. I shouldn't say it like that. I am at Rob Dunwood on all the things. Let me say it that way. That's probably a little bit.
You're all things, Rob. Yeah. I mean, come on.
And y'all, we're going to go ahead and call it the show.
All right.
All right. So we will holler at everybody in a week's time.
Peace.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.